In the early morning hours of December 8th, 2000, 22-year-old Trevor Deely was out and about in the streets of Dublin. At the time, Trevor was working at the Bank of Ireland Asset Management Building on Leeson Street. That night, he was attending his office's Christmas party at Buck Whaley's nightclub, located a bit further down on Leeson Street in Dublin's city center. Despite the heavy rain and wind that Thursday evening, the local pubs and clubs were full of people getting into the Christmas spirit themselves. After attending this party, Trevor left the club at around 3:30 a.m. The rain was still not letting up, and without an umbrella, Trevor decided to head down to his office not too far away to grab one. The local taxi drivers were on strike at the time, and without the advent of Uber or Lyft, still years away at this point in December of 2000, Trevor decided to just walk. CCTV footage showed Trevor arriving at the BIAM office a short time later. A man dressed in what's believed to be a black hooded sweatshirt was seen in the footage, standing just outside of the office's front gates, having been there for approximately half an hour. When Trevor arrives at the office, the two seem to chat for a moment before Trevor walks inside. There, inside the office, Trevor made himself a cup of tea and then chatted up a colleague of his, Carl Pender, who was working the overnight shift that fateful evening. A few minutes later, two more men arrive at the office gates but leave just a moment later. These two men were later identified as colleagues. After a few minutes inside the office, Trevor grabs an umbrella and heads out once again, likely headed toward his apartment on Serpentine Avenue, located in the neighborhood of Ballsbridge. The time is just after 4 a.m., and the same surveillance cameras that captured Trevor walking into the office capture him walking out into the rainy streets of Dublin. At the time Trevor leaves the office, the man who had been standing outside of it, seen wearing dark-colored clothing, was gone. However, a short time later, another CCTV camera along Haddington Road would capture Trevor walking, but he wasn't alone. A suspicious man in dark clothing can be seen following Trevor from afar, and Gardaí, members of the Garda, Ireland's police force, believe that this is the same man spotted outside of the Bank of Ireland Asset Management office a short time prior. After this, Trevor disappeared without a trace. The man seen walking behind him remains unidentified today. Many years have passed, but no one knows what happened to Trevor, nor the identity of the man who was seen walking behind him, who we can only presume was following him. The only thing we know for sure is that the moment this young man walked away from the CCTV cameras on Dublin's Baggot Street Bridge, he was never seen again. This is the story of Trevor Deely. Trevor Deely was born on August 15, 1978, to his parents Michael and Anne. The youngest of four children, Trevor would grow up with one brother, Mark, and two sisters, Michelle and Pamela. There, in the Irish city of Naas, County Kildare, Trevor took a while to grow into his lean frame, standing approximately 6 feet 3 inches at the time of his disappearance with reddish hair and a distinctive walk. Described as a friendly kid, many remember Trevor taking a while to figure out what he was going to do for a living. Like his older siblings, Trevor was not particularly gifted, either academically or athletically, but over time he began to express an affinity for math. After finishing school, Trevor decided to study business at the Waterford Institute of Technology, working a part-time supermarket job on the side to support himself. However, he dropped out during his second year. This, however, ultimately led to an abrupt career change into an emerging market, computers. After dropping out of business school in the late 1990s, Trevor was admitted to a computer program in Dublin, which he had been introduced to through his sister Michelle. She later recalled, "He took to it like a duck to water. It was like turning a key in a lock and he finally found what he really enjoyed, and he seemed to be really good at it as well." Shortly after completing this course in May of 1999, Trevor accepted a position in the Bank of Ireland Asset Management's IT department. At the time, Trevor was contemplating positions with at least two other companies, but his father Michael advised him, "Take the bank. Banks are safer than any of the others." Just 22 years old, Trevor started working at BIAM after following up on his father's recommendation. There, his colleagues described him as a hard worker who was ambitious, reliable, and popular amongst his coworkers. He quickly became an important part of the team there, and his manager, Dara Tracy, would later describe him as both very trustworthy and a good guy. In more detail, Tracy stated, "He was almost the perfect employee. He was reliable. Nothing was too much trouble. He was hungry to learn, and he mingled well with everyone in the company. He was a very happy guy. He was one of the nice guys to be around. He never bitched about other people. He had a very good work ethic, and he was very trustworthy. I'm not just saying this because of the situation, but Trevor was really a good guy." Glenn Cullen, one of Trevor's childhood friends, remained close with him throughout their early adulthood, having originally met during their first year of secondary school in Nace. Later talking about their friendship in an interview, Glenn remembered, "We did practically everything together. I never had an argument with him in any shape or form. Not about girls, not about anything." Conlith Lunan, another one of Trevor's close friends, later recalled, "Trev was a jovial character. He was always in good form. He had a good head on his shoulders as well. He was doing very well at work, so he had a serious side to him. He always took work seriously." In their early 20s, Trevor, Glenn, and Conlith used to hit up the local pubs and clubs together. They spent a lot of time on the weekends together, and all even had the same type of cell phone, Nokia 1610s, which were fairly common at the time. Trevor used to smoke either Marlboro Lights or Benson & Hedges, in a time before most places banned smoking indoors. He often used a Zippo, not matches, to light his cigarettes. His friend Conlith later stated, "We were all ale drinkers, which was quite unusual for that age group, but it was never falling around the place." While both of his best friends still lived in Nace, approximately 35 kilometers southwest of Dublin, Trevor lived in an apartment in Dublin itself. While he liked to spend his weekends with his friends, he wasn't known to be involved in anything criminal or suspicious. He was just a normal 22-year-old with an office job that liked to work hard and spent his free time hanging out with friends and family. Approximately 2 months before his disappearance, on the first Saturday of October in 2000, Trevor's brother Mark traveled to Dublin to attend a football final with a group of friends. Trevor went with him, and Mark later recalled the two having a great time during what would later become his final memories with Trevor. "It was a time when I was really getting to know him. He was no longer my little brother by then, but more of a peer. His working life was just starting. He was starting to have his own money. We might as well have been the same age then." In late November 2000, just weeks before his disappearance, Trevor flew to the US, specifically Alaska, to meet up with a girl that he had met the prior year. She had traveled to Dublin during her summer vacation, and the two had kept in touch throughout the rest of the year. At the time, Trevor's friend, Glenn Cullen, worked for Aer Lingus as a long-haul flight attendant. As an employee of the airline, Glenn was entitled to discounts and free flights for friends and family. So through his job, Glenn offered to arrange for Trevor to fly the thousands of miles to Alaska for free. He later recalled, "I'm nearly positive he wouldn't have gone to Alaska if I hadn't arranged the free flight for him." He also later stated, "Trevor traveled from Dublin to Los Angeles, and then as far as I'm aware, he got a connecting flight straight on up to Anchorage. This girl was at university in Anchorage. He went by himself to see this girl up in Anchorage that he had met in Dublin that summer. I never met her. She wasn't here for long." On Tuesday, December 5th, Trevor returned home from Alaska. Instead of going immediately home to his apartment in Dublin, however, he decided to visit his parents' home in Nace. Michael Dealey, Trevor's father, later remembered, "He had only gotten to Dublin Airport that morning and came down on a bus to Nace, and he was yawning all the time with tiredness. I remember him sitting on the couch at home and Anne was cooking a big steak for him." Despite suffering from pretty serious jet lag, Trevor told his parents about the many fascinating things he had seen on his trip to and from Anchorage. Sadly, though, his father Michael was a bit rushed, having to plan for a business meeting outside of Dublin, so he wasn't able to spend much time with his youngest son that day. Michael left for his meeting later that day, making plans to hear more about this trip the next time they saw, and Trevor only stayed for a few more hours before heading back to Dublin, with his bosses expecting him back in the office the next morning. Sadly, that was the last time that Trevor Dealey's parents ever saw him. A Christmas party for Trevor's office was scheduled for later that week, Thursday, December 7th, 2000. If you recall, this would end up being the night that Trevor disappeared. Dara Tracy, Trevor's manager, later recalled the party starting at a Dublin nightclub called Copperface Jack's. After that, Trevor and his colleagues gathered for a meal at the Hilton Hotel on Charlemont Street, and then the party moved on to Buck Whaley's nightclub. Back in the city Nace, Trevor's friends Glenn and Conlith were in the midst of a night out themselves. While at the Hilton with his colleagues, sometime between 11 and 11:30 p.m., Trevor called Glenn, but they had a hard time hearing each other because of the background noise around them. Glenn later recalled, "I said to him, 'Trev, I'll call you back.' Then he called me back. I missed the call." Trevor left Buck Whaley's nightclub at approximately 3:25 a.m. At the time, a heavy storm was brewing outside, with gusts as high as 60 to 70 miles per hour. And if you recall from the episode intro, Dublin's taxi drivers were on strike. With the rain lashing down, Trevor decided to head to his office building nearby to grab an umbrella. 10 minutes after leaving the nightclub, Trevor arrived at his office and was let in after calling security. After heading inside, he made a cup of tea and then spoke to his colleague, Carl Pender, who was working the overnight shift that evening. Carl was the only employee in the office that night until Trevor arrived rather unexpectedly. A computer operator at Bank of Ireland Asset Management, Carl had not been at the office Christmas party and had only taken on the responsibilities of the overnight shift after his shift partner fell ill earlier that week and ended up in the hospital. In an interview, Carl later recalled, "When Trevor came in, he asked me, 'Did I have time for a cup of tea?' I said, 'Yeah, sure. I just had something to do at that immediate time,' and he said, 'Grand, I just need to log on for a minute.'" Trevor then logged onto his computer at a desk nearby, and likely spent a moment checking his emails or something like that, possibly scheduling his task for the following day, which he still had to do. Carl stated later on, "I'm not sure if he was doing something to do with work or sending an email. I never asked him." Before leaving the office, Trevor and Carl had a cup of tea together. Then, at 4:03 a.m., the two bid adieu, and Trevor headed out into the blustery streets of Dublin. Armed with an umbrella, he headed off in the direction of his apartment, located in the Renoir complex on Serpentine Avenue in the Ballsbridge neighborhood. At around this time, Trevor tried calling his pal Glenn Cullen again, leaving him a voicemail. Glenn was already asleep at this point and had his phone charging downstairs in his kitchen, so he would not see the message until hours later. The following morning, December 8th, 2000, Glenn picked up his phone and discovered the voicemail message, which he later recalled saying something along the lines of, "Hi Glenn, I've missed you there. Just on my way home. All going good. I'll talk to you tomorrow." After listening to the voicemail, Glenn deleted it, not believing it to be significant at the time. Investigators would later attempt to retrieve this voicemail, but because of the technological limitations at the time, were not able to. So all we have from this voicemail is the paraphrased version that his friend remembered after a night out on the town, which likely got the gist, but may have missed something. Maybe something in Trevor's tone or inflection, or even noises in the background. It's impossible to tell. Glenn also doesn't remember exactly when the call had been made, but speculated that it came into his phone somewhere between 3:55 and 4:05 a.m., likely closer to the latter. According to Detective Sergeant Michael Fitzgerald, who worked the case from its inception, the last activity in Trevor's phone log came at 4:06 a.m. on the morning of Friday, December 8th. From this point forward, he had no known contact with anyone. However, that is not the last place that he was seen alive. Back in 2000, there were far fewer CCTV cameras than there are today. So sadly, only two known cameras captured Trevor walking from the nightclub to his office, and then on from there, wherever he ended up. If you recall from the episode introduction, one of those surveillance cameras spotted him outside of the office building. The other spotted him walking outside of a local bank, located on the corner of Bagot Street Bridge and Haddington Road, a space now occupied by a pizza joint. The time of the second sighting was 4:14 a.m., approximately 8 minutes after Trevor's last recorded phone activity. Approximately half an hour before Trevor arrived at his office building, close to 3 a.m., a man dressed in dark clothing showed up outside and seemed to lurk around for a bit. When Trevor arrived at 3:35, he had a brief conversation with the man before going inside to grab an umbrella, chat with his colleague Carl Pender, and have a cup of tea. 2 minutes after Trevor arrived at the office gates, two more men arrived, but were gone within moments. As I mentioned earlier, these two men were later identified as co-workers of Trevor's and were believed to have coincidentally been there. By the time Trevor left his office, at around 4 a.m., the man in the dark jacket or hoodie who had been lingering around was no longer waiting there. But in the CCTV footage recorded a bit later, at approximately 4:14 a.m., Trevor is seen walking past AIB Bank near the corner of the Bagot Street Bridge and Haddington Road, in the direction of his apartment. However, in the footage, approximately 30 seconds after Trevor passes, another figure steps into frame, a man dressed in dark clothing, possibly a hoodie. Authorities believe that this is the same man who briefly spoke to Trevor outside of his office gates, who remains unidentified to this day. Despite numerous appeals by the Irish Garda, this man has failed to come forward over the past 22 years. Authorities believe that he is the same man who had been spotted talking to Trevor outside of his office, and like I said, he remains unidentified to this day. This last little snippet of CCTV footage represents the last known sighting of Trevor Dealey. Now, we're going to pause for just a moment to hear a word from today's sponsors. On the morning of Friday, December 8th, 2000, Trevor Dealey did not show up for work. Because he and his colleagues had been out rather late the night before, his absence wasn't seen as overly suspicious, even though this behavior was very unlike him. To make matters even more complicated, Trevor's flatmates were away that weekend, so at this point nobody was aware he was even missing. He had made some loose plans with both his friends and family for that weekend, but because nobody was able to get in touch with him, they both just assumed that he was with the other. On Monday, December 11th, Trevor was a no-show for work yet again. This is when his manager got concerned. Worried, Dara Tracy started asking other employees if they had heard from Trevor since the evening of the Christmas party, but nobody had seen or spoken to him since then. Tracy then alerted the bank's HR department, informing them, "We have a problem here. This guy is not to be found. We can't get hold of him, and we don't know where he is. What should we do?" After confirming that nobody had spoken to or seen Trevor in several days, the bank reported him as a missing person and alerted his family back in Nace. From here, his family began to branch out through Trevor's network of acquaintances via telephone, with Trevor's mom, Anne, asking her husband Michael to check out the apartment that Trevor shared with two others. She also called Trevor's friends, but discovered that none of them had seen him since the previous Thursday. Trevor's father Michael went to his son's apartment, but did not have a key. He tried ringing the doorbell repeatedly, but nobody responded. With no other option, and no clue pointing them to their youngest son's whereabouts, Trevor's parents had to report him missing that evening. Glenn Cullen and other friends of Trevor's accompanied them to the Garda station in Nace, where they handed over all of the information available to them to the authorities. Trevor's older brother, Mark Dealey, had been informed of his brother's disappearance at approximately 10:30 on Monday morning. He was at work in Castlebar, in Western Ireland, more than 200 kilometers away, but decided to leave for Dublin right away. His wife, who was at home and pregnant with their first child, stayed behind at home. When Mark arrived in the Dublin area later that afternoon, both of his parents were at home. After arriving, he headed towards Trevor's apartment, hoping to ask around and see what he could find. He reportedly looked around Trevor's neighborhood, checking nearby alleyways and even garbage bins. He even asked some local security guards and business employees if they had seen Trevor. One of the guards in front of the nearby US embassy told him that due to the expected visit of then US President Bill Clinton the next day, all of the garbage bins and dumpsters in the area had been emptied over the weekend. The local government had even taken the step of checking and sealing the manhole covers, meaning that both avenues, the garbage and sewers, would be a dead end for Mark's search. Meanwhile, Trevor's older sister Michelle was in London when her mother gave her the bad news. She had not seen Trevor since Easter, but had been in recent contact with him through email. The two had emailed just earlier that week, and she had asked him his shirt size. That weekend, unbeknownst that her brother was missing, Michelle had bought Trevor a shirt, which she intended to give to him in just a couple of weeks for Christmas. Later, recalling the moment that she learned of her brother's disappearance, Michelle stated, "There was an instant realization that this was bad. I couldn't think straight. I knew it was bad. I knew it was awful. It's like a flash of light. It just blanks everything else out." Michelle came back home on the first flight she could find and headed straight to her parents' home, where she stayed for the foreseeable future. Pamela, Trevor's other sister, joined them shortly afterward. Soon, the entire Dealey family, joined by Trevor's friends, started searching for him in earnest. Trevor Dealey's family and friends began going door to door throughout the area near his apartment in Dublin, hitting up every pub, club, and restaurant they could find in the hopes of finding out where he had gone. They began putting up hundreds of posters with his name and photo, and even distributed countless amounts of leaflets with the same information. When they weren't doing that, they were likely hitting the streets and asking if someone, anyone, had seen or heard Trevor since he had gone missing on the morning of December 8th. That December, residents of Dublin and the surrounding area became accustomed to seeing Trevor's face all around the city. His family and friends did what they could all day every day to spread awareness of his disappearance, and some of the posters they hung up remained there for months to come, in certain cases, even years. Detective Sergeant Michael Fitzgerald, who worked Trevor's case from the very beginning, stated, "The Dealeys set the standard for what families do when someone got missing. They were very proactive. The town was postered before we got out of the door. I've never worked on a case where the family was so proactive." The CCTV footage from AIB Bank, which captured Trevor walking by at 4:14 on the morning of December 8th, was not discovered by police, but was actually obtained by Trevor's friends through their dogged, persistent efforts. While they were grateful to have found the footage, by the time they received it, they discovered that four entire days had been lost. On Tuesday, December 12th, members of the Garda Sub-Aqua Unit, now known as the Garda Water Unit, searched the Grand Canal, located between the Baggett Street Bridge and Leeson Street Bridge, as well as the River Dodder, two of the three rivers which ran through Dublin. Sadly, though, they did not find anything. Not only was Trevor nowhere to be found in these bodies of water, but there was no trace of him found within. In fact, the items that he had with him at the time of his disappearance, his coat, wallet, phone, and umbrella, have never been recovered. Tosh Lavery, a senior Gardaí who worked for 30 years in the Sub-Aqua Unit, was one of the people who dove into the Grand Canal during this search for Trevor Dealey. He later remembered, "The canal is an easy place to search. It's like a swimming pool." This statement, along with many others made by various members of Trevor's family and the Garda, has led many to think that Trevor never went into the water. And while it's impossible to tell what happened in the days between Trevor disappearing and these numerous searches, the lack of any evidence indicating he went into the water seems to indicate just that, right? Regarding this, Trevor's brother, Mark Dealey, stated, "I'm absolutely certain today that Trevor, or anything belonging to Trevor, is not in the Grand Canal. What I cannot be certain of is that he is not in the Grand Canal Basin, or something belonging to him is not in the Grand Canal Basin." For a time, authorities briefly considered draining the Grand Canal Basin in their search for Trevor, but discovered that doing so would affect the structure of the surrounding buildings. Searches of the basin would be facilitated, but were also unable to find any trace of the missing 22-year-old. It was later learned that the weekend that Trevor had gone missing, his sister Michelle attempted to call him several times, probably 4 times, per her recollection, but did not know that he was missing at the time, so just assumed that he had been held up by friends or other family members. She believes that she heard his phone ring during these calls, which, according to senior research fellow Dr. Philip Perry, who worked for the Radio and Optical Communications Lab at Dublin City University, wouldn't have happened if Trevor had gone into the water. While explaining how a phone in 2000 would have gone dead within seconds of falling into the water, Dr. Perry recalled to the Irish Times in 2015, "The radio signals would not penetrate more than a few inches of water, so it couldn't ring. If a phone has been in the water since 2000, there may still be a slim chance of getting the SIM out of it and getting phone numbers off it, but that's really all you could get from it now." Although technology in 2000 was not nearly as advanced as it is today, it was still the mobile phone era. Sadly, though, while Trevor's cell phone could have provided a lot of clues to help solve his disappearance, authorities were not able to locate any trace of it, nor could his network provider. Hoping to discover if there was a link between Trevor's disappearance and his trip to Alaska just weeks prior, 2 members of the Garda traveled to Alaska to interview the girl that Trevor had visited. Trevor's sisters, Michelle and Pamela, would make a similar trip on their own, separately traveling to Anchorage to speak to the girl to discover if she potentially knew anything. Sadly, though, neither of these trips seemed to rouse any leads. Trevor's brother Mark remained in Dublin for 2 months, but eventually had to return home, telling reporters, "I came back because I couldn't do any more. I just ran out of ideas. I made the decision to come home because I said, if I keep going the way I'm going to drive myself absolutely mad, and it's time for life to move on." Michael Dealey, Trevor's father, did not resume his job for more than 6 months following Trevor's disappearance. His office on Lower Mount Street, overlooking the canal where his son had last been seen, became a daily reminder of his tragic loss. He later said, "It couldn't have been worse from that point of view. You were reminded every day and every hour when you went out." In 2016, the Garda investigation into Trevor Dealey's mysterious disappearance was reopened. They announced a €100,000 reward for anyone that provided significant information regarding the case. At that time, footage and images from the 2 CCTV cameras that captured footage of Trevor were sent to Britain, where they were to be enhanced digitally with new software. This enhanced footage finally emerged publicly in April of 2017, with Garda announcing that the man dressed in black, seen walking behind Trevor at 4:14 a.m., was the same man that he had spoken to outside of his office. To this day, this man remains unidentified, as does his rationale for waiting outside of Trevor's office and later walking behind him. While one might think that this is merely a coincidence, authorities do not believe so, and this unknown subject is believed to be the primary person of interest in Trevor's still unsolved disappearance. In August of 2017, an informant came forward and told Garda that Trevor had been murdered by a well-known criminal operating out of the Dublin suburb of Crumlin. This criminal, a member of a local gang, was well-known to authorities and immersed in the drug and prostitution trade, which peppered the area near Baggett Street where Trevor was last seen. This informant claimed that the person spotted on CCTV cameras following Trevor was a part of the gang and wanted to gain access to the Bank of Ireland asset management building on that morning that Trevor disappeared. Trevor reportedly had a chance encounter with the man that morning, and this individual then hoped that Trevor might help provide them access to the bank. According to this informant, whose identity remains unknown to the public, this chance encounter ultimately led to Trevor's murder. The informant believed that they may have been buried in the Chapel Lizard area, which is about 8 kilometers away from where Trevor had gone missing, near Phoenix Park. Acting on this information, a massive Garda search began in Chapel Lizard, a suburb on the western outskirts of Dublin. They kept digging in the area for approximately 6 weeks, but no human remains were recovered during their search, nor was any trace of Trevor Deeley. After 2 months, the search was called off, and Gardaí declared that a thorough search of the area had not uncovered any fruitful information or evidence. Despite that, authorities believed that the informant they spoke to may have had valid information, but without any evidence to support their claims, it made them little more than theories. By the end of 2019, the Irish Prison Service, along with Crime Stoppers and the Garda, began displaying posters in prisons, appealing for information in this case. While this has yet to yield any workable leads, authorities remain hopeful that they can one day locate Trevor Deeley and return to his family with some kind of resolution. Apart from the theories that Trevor Deeley had been murdered by a random stranger or gang member, multiple other theories have come and gone over the years. One, which I briefly mentioned earlier in the episode, is that Trevor had somehow ended up in a body of water, where he was potentially washed out to sea. With Dublin being a port town, this is a real possibility, but in the absence of any evidence, it remains just a theory. Some have theorized that Trevor was drunk enough to the point of stumbling into the Grand Canal or River Dodder and drowning, but I personally find that hard to believe. I'm sure that after a night of partying, Trevor was undoubtedly intoxicated at the time that he was going home, but he seemed to be well aware that he had to work the next morning and made the decision to leave home in the middle of a monsoon, so it's clear that he still had some of his faculties remaining in those early morning hours. He even went as far as heading to his office to grab an umbrella nearby, and was set to walk the couple of kilometers home to his apartment. I just find it hard to believe that he would have drunkenly fallen into a river when there's no evidence pointing to that. Maybe if his coworkers had described him as overly drunk or something, I might buy into it, but no one seemed to talk about him that way. Some have speculated that Trevor may have decided to take his own life in those early morning hours, but this is another theory without any credible evidence pointing towards it. Those that knew Trevor believed that he had no reason to take his own life, and was reported as acting happy and sociable in his final known hours. He had not shown any sign of depression in the months or years beforehand, and had well-documented plans for his future. If he had been depressed enough to take his own life, he had done an outstanding job of shielding that from the outside world, which I guess is possible, but without any evidence to support it, it just seems to be another baseless theory to me. Others have theorized that Trevor's disappearance might be linked to his prior voyage to Alaska, which had taken place just weeks before he went missing in November of 2000. Some think that he might have gotten caught up in something in his travels to America, perhaps a love triangle of sorts, which maybe followed him home. Despite these rumors, though, his family dismissed these as little more than noise, with them believing that his trip had nothing to do with his disappearance. A final theory that has made some rounds in online circles is that Trevor had been involved in a banking scam with the individuals who later killed him, possibly tied to the informant who came forward in August of 2017. In response to this, Trevor's sister Michelle stated, "He was a simple guy. He was an entry-level IT worker. And yet people have him caught up in this banking scam, or that he was involved in some crazy scheme and that's why he was taken. It's crazy." Trevor's family has battled through a lot of heartache and adversity to get the right facts out, with countless theories and rumors regarding his case coming up over the years. Sadly, though, they still don't know which one might be true, with Michael Cryan, the family's Garda liaison officer, telling the press, "The unfortunate thing for the family is that we just don't know what happened. If you can find a body, people can grieve. They have acceptance, they have a place to go, and the longer it goes on, the harder it gets." After 2 decades, this remains a story that is still very much unsolved. However, in this case, at least one thing seems crystal clear. Someone, somewhere, knows something. It has been nearly 22 years since Trevor Deeley disappeared, If he was still alive, he'd be almost exactly twice the age he was when he went missing. His family remains just as committed to finding him today as they were when they first heard the heartbreaking news, and have worked tirelessly over the years to keep the mystery fresh in people's minds. They are continuously producing new posters that still exist for anyone with information in this case. "We're entirely reliant on the public," they've stated. "We're entirely reliant on that person or persons who knows what happened to Trevor and where he is. That's all we're interested in, where he is. It's not even what happened, it's where he is. We are appealing to those who, for whatever reason, have not been in a position to come forward to date to reconsider contacting us." Anyone with information in this case can contact any Garda station to help this struggling family find the truth. They remain hopeful that someone somewhere can recall one tiny piece of information about where they were, maybe what they saw or heard, on the morning of December 8th, 2000. If so, they can help resolve the mystery of what happened to this family's son, brother, and friend. Until such a time, the story of Trevor Dealey will remain unresolved.